was a rare quiet start for us. Holy cow.
I know.
Holy cow. I'm like, wait, what? I was actually playing with my phone. Anyway, hey, everybody, it's Kai. Back today with the Thursday edition of Make Me Smart. Molly Wood and me making today as much as we can make sense.
That's right. It is Hollowed Out Shell Thursday. And I will tell you, it is amazing how, yes, like clockwork, despite my like renewed sense of calm and vague optimism, thanks to my yoga routine, like, no, it's still like a double yoga day or something. I'm still totally hollowed out come Thursday.
Yeah. Yeah.
Very reliable indicator of the progress of the week.
Anyway, it just is. All right. Standard drill today. A couple of news items up on top, and then something a little different on the bottom half of the show. We're gonna pick up a thread, a controversial thread, one might say.
Oh yeah,
from Ms. Wood from yesterday's podcast. But we'll surprise
stirred
you when we get there.
The hornet's nest.
Stirred. Yes, you did indeed.
Pretty sure. Also, speaking of hornet's nests that we intend to avoid, I'm just going to telegraph this immediately, that neither of us brought news stories related to Facebook, because amazingly and presciently, we covered all of that yesterday on some level. And come today, there's frankly just too much to even fit into one show because, good God.
Just can't even. Nope. Okay, so I'll go first. Mine's a quickie and a yay and also a boo. The yay is for a California assemblywoman named Buffy Wicks, who gave birth, give or take, a month ago. And the California State Assembly is still voting on some key legislation, most specifically for our concerns, something we've actually talked about on this program, which is a new law that would make it easier to do multi-unit housing in the state of California. We're having a big housing crisis. Anyway, she, having just given birth, petitioned assembly leadership for the right to vote remotely or vote by proxy. And she was denied. And the Speaker of the House said, no, I'm sorry, maternity leave and having just created a human is not reason enough. So Buffy Wicks cowboyed up. She swaddles her one-month-old – it's a girl, right? I think it's a daughter, yeah.
Ellie.
Swaddled her one-month-old, put a mask on herself, drove to Sacramento from Oakland. It's like an hour, plus or minus. Put a mask on and voted. And then when she was done voting and giving her a little speech, she said, and now I'm going to feed my daughter. And I think that's so cool for her. And it's amazing. It's also freaking terrible that she had to do that. And the California Assembly leadership was just so jerky that they wouldn't do that.
That's a really nice word.
Not qualifying
in a pandemic.
Yeah.
What they said was, you don't qualify for a high-risk coronavirus waiver despite having to bring a newborn to the floor of the California State Senate. I mean, every piece of outrage that's being rained on these people is so deserved. But I got to say, my girl Buffy, she's from Oakland.
Yeah, yeah. How are we not?
That's why she's so tough.
You know, that's right. That's right. Anyway, that's my thing. It's inspirational and just deeply distressing all at the same time, you know?
Yeah. And it is actually, you know, it's pretty emblematic of like the exact thing that so many parents are facing in this pandemic. And you realize that it's not solved at any level and by any organization up to and including this. But yeah, that lady is committed to housing.
Yeah. Good for her.
And us. Yeah. So, and this is funny because I also am, I know we don't talk about it a lot anymore, but back to the virus, which is still a thing and likely to be a thing for a long time to come. This article was brought to my attention by a tweet that essentially said, hey, heads up. The thing about COVID-19 is it's probably going to become a pre-existing condition that could likely rewire our healthcare system for years to come. And the data that they used to illustrate that tweet was the fact that according to the, hold on,
standing
according
by.
To the team doctor at Penn State University, up to a third to 35% of the Big Ten athletes, football players, who tested positive for COVID-19, whether they were symptomatic or not, had apparently had myocarditis, an inflammation of the heart muscle that can be fatal if left unchecked. 30 to 35% of them had inflamed heart muscles that could down the road kill them, and that was whether or not they had symptoms. This just blew my mind. Like, the idea that this could be creating, and we know that there's this, like, there's the long haul thing with it's so early in the process of in the progression of this virus, that to assume that because a large number of people are asymptomatic at the time of their infection, it's not a big deal, or it goes away, or that's the end of it.
Yeah,
may not be the case, and that was terrifying.
I don't think there is an end to this thing. I mean, honestly, until there's a vaccine, right, which is stable and tested, and all of that stuff that does not seem like it's happening right now because they want to get it out before Election Day. Until that happens, I don't think there is an end. You know, and then even those who get it have these long-lasting consequences. We don't know what we don't know about this thing.
And how many people, I mean, if you really think about, if you play this forward and you think about how many people have been infected with this virus and never knew because testing has still not gotten to where it needs to be. Like, who knows what things could be cropping up in 1 year, 2 years, 5 years, 10 years. Because of asymptomatic infections that were never detected. I mean, like, we really are in the midst of an upheaval as we sort of keep. I feel like this is the week of realizing, like, that, or at least internalizing that we're laying the groundwork for, like, these are earthquakes right now happening that are going to be having aftershocks for decades.
Yeah. Yeah.
That was intense. And so honestly, if you're looking for a reason to cancel football or everything until we have it figured out, like, that's it. Because, wow.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
We should say, by the way, sorry, I'm just going to jump in here as we segue to the more lighthearted portion of this thing. One of the things that was on our list of extra questions for What Do You Want to Know Wednesday is the thing that you have said a bunch of times on this podcast, that we are like 6 to 8 weeks away from being able to shut this thing down. If we all just did what we know we should do, right? Wear a mask, do all this stuff. We had a guy write in yesterday, and we didn't get to it because we ran out of time, who said, where did that come from? I mean, how do we know this? Andy Slavitt, who used to run Medicaid and Medicare services in the Obama administration, says that all the time. It's and not just him, but many other epidemiological professionals. I mean, that's the deal. You wear
that's
masks and
it.
Do the right thing for 6 to 8 weeks. Yeah.
It's not even that, right? It's partly that, but it's also, I mean, sadly, it is not even that. Like, that would make a big difference if everybody just sort of, like, did that.
Yeah.
But also, right. We literally need to be able to say at the national level, okay, we were wrong. And now, everybody, let's pull together and have this unified message. We're going to shut everything down for 4 to 5 weeks. And to everybody who says, like, who's going to pay for that? Yeah, we're going to need to pay for that. We're going to pay everybody, you know, for a hard lockdown, which we have not had in this country, period. Hard lockdown, universal masking, tracing, testing. And then we have it to the point where we can, like, trace the little outbreaks and put those out as they come up. They're going to still come up because we're seeing that happen all over the world. But, like, we haven't even really tried. So today could be the day.
maybe
tomorrow we'll start. That would be great.
We won't.
Any day could be the day. Somebody pointed that. Somebody said it was both depressing and hopeful, which is kind of how I think about it too. We could have Halloween. Let's start now.
That's right. All right, let's go.
All right, Daniel, make me smile time.
There we go. Okay.
Because there is a lot in here.
You people feel strongly about the Avengers and Marvel Comics universe.
Yeah, which is not a surprise. And yet, because it got such a, frankly, delightful response, because everybody just needs, like, a fun thing to think about, we decided to devote our entire Make Me Smile section to this burning controversy. As a reminder, in case you missed What Do You Want to Know Wednesday, it's because Aaron, one of our listeners, wanted to know the best way to dive into the Marvel Cinematic Universe somewhat on the fly. I was like, you know what? I'm going to say chronological. Go for it. And then there was some talk of Captain America, the First Avenger, because it's not my favorite. And then... many thoughts. So many thoughts occurred.
So we're gonna give you some of them. Charisse from Massachusetts wrote to say, "I am adamant that the first trip through the Marvel comic unit, cinematic MCU, yeah. Anyway, must be done in release order. That release order is in bold from Charisse. The release order was carefully plotted by Marvel for maximum storytelling effect. That way, when you watch in chronological order the second time through, you can see all the little Easter eggs that harken to other movies in the series Wakanda Forever."
Mm-hmm. Fair. Yep. Definitely depends on how much you want to work. Aaron in Milwaukee, Wisconsin wrote in and wanted to say, as of a few weeks ago, I finished a year-long journey of watching the 26 films in chronological order, most of which I had not previously seen, and it was a tremendous cinematic experience. Though I didn't agree with your take on Captain America, but perhaps the fact that it made my brother cry has me endeared to the film. I wholly encourage the chronological experience.
Kat Green, who runs the editor's shop here at Marketplace, weighed in this morning on an email to me and Molly. MCU chronologist here, just chiming into the pile of emails y'all are surely receiving to say, how dare you about Captain America? And to add my controversial take, Iron Man 2 is the best of the Iron Mans. I will not be taking questions at this time. Thank you. So, even here at Marketplace, there is dissent.
I know, I loved it. I wrote back and I was like, maybe I should have shared my other controversial take, which is I actually think that Captain America Winter Soldier is the best movie.
Oh, yeah. Oh, geez.
In the entire series. Yeah. Like, it's not that I don't like Captain America, people. Just the one. Michael in Orlando wrote to tell us, regardless, though, of which order you choose. And this is why, actually, watching them in release order is a delightful storytelling experience, just for this one thing, which Michael points out is the post-credit scene that ties it into the next one. He says, I didn't discover this right away, and things would have made so much more sense if I would have known. So you should do a PSA emphasizing how important this is. And that is true. If you watch in release order, you gotta watch the post-credit scene. That's key.
Yeah, always. Always. Okay, last whack at this. Some of you did agree with me that Captain America is awesome, so thank you, Travis Pregitzer, I apologize, and Don Burley. Brandon Simbeck wrote in to say this, but Molly, Captain America, the First Avenger, gave us the delightful character of Peggy Carter, which is true.
Yeah, it's totally true.
It's
not like I hate it. It's not like it's the movie I'll never watch again, the movie that shall never be named.
Anywho.
All right, you guys are the best. Thank you for listening, writing us your thoughts. I kind of want to start the year long. I want to watch them in chronological order and just see how that feels. I think that seems kind of delightful.
Do you have a year to do this? I mean, you know.
Apparently.
Apparently.
Or not. Any day could be the day. Depends on what tomorrow holds. All right. On a very different topic, even though we did not talk that much about Facebook and disinformation and all of those things, we are still working on that episode about QAnon for next week, Tuesday. And our new senior producer is very committed to making it a very important episode, which I'm actually really happy about. So if you have questions you want us to ask, if you have a personal experience with QAnon, if you have lost a loved one, as the nomenclature goes, to QAnon, send us your stories. MakeMeSmart@Marketplace.org. We want to hear them.
All right. We are done for the day. Tomorrow, Economics on Tap. I haven't the right kind of gear now, so I'm going to have to do a shopping. No live stream, though. Technical difficulties. Apologies. We're going to get that back in gear. Because it's fun to watch you guys watch us, if that makes sense.
I know, it's our favorite. Maybe I'll try to set up a Discord for it or something.
Ooh, there you go.
Just a little chat room on the sly. Make Me Smart is produced and directed by Rose Conlon, who at this very moment is thinking, I'm sorry, what, a Discord? No, I did not sign up for that. Yeah. Tony Wagner is our digital producer. Ben Hethcote is our video producer. Ethan Peretz is our video intern. God love him. And Erica Phillips writes our newsletter and those explainers that you hear on your smart speakers.
Daniel Ramirez was in charge down in downtown L.A. today. He composed our theme music with Ben Talladay. The senior producer is Bridget Bodner. The executive director of On Demand is Star Nieves. And that is what we got.
What we got.
The world can be a confusing place for kids, and finding the words to explain it all can be tricky, too. Introducing Million Bazillion, a Webby-winning podcast from Marketplace that takes your kids on exciting adventures to answer the awkward and complex questions they have about money. Each week, we tackle hard-hitting inquiries from kid listeners like,
what is a college account and how does it work?
I want to know what unions are and what they are for.
Why does the U.S. have so much gold in Fort Knox and what do they use it for?
Help your kids understand how money fits into the world around us. Listen to Million Bazillion wherever you get your podcasts.